347, we sing, who's going to follow Jesus? We will follow Jesus in just a few minutes. As a way of encouraging anyone tonight that's among us who had not obeyed the gospel of Christ, to make that decision, I hope we'll make it so as to say, I'll follow Jesus. As we've been studying about the last week in the life of Jesus, as you look at the gospels, and if you read the article in the bulletin, you find that Dan King is talking about the proofs given about the deity of Christ in the Gospel of John. And made a point in that part of the article, the fact that what we have is really a small sample of the life of Jesus. Now, there are many other things that Jesus did, but however, there's not enough time or space to really sit down and write about everything that Christ did. But it's enough to give us the information we need to determine that He is the Son of God. And as you look at that last week of the life of Jesus, we have more information given to us. And every day it builds up to this crescendo that we got to about now. And that is the night before his death. And as you say about that event, that we find a lot of information given to us. Among that information, it deals with Peter. There's a number of folks that really had connection with Jesus. And we read about them in this last days or last day of the life of Christ. And over in Matthew 26 chapter, turn your Bibles there with me in verse 47. In verse 47, it says, while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude of swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now, his betrayer had given them a sign, saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one who sees him. Immediately he went up to Jesus and said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. But Jesus said to him, friend, why have you come? Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And suddenly one who was with Jesus struck out his hand, drew a sword, struck the servant of the high priest, and cut off his ear. But Jesus said to him, put your sword in its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think I cannot now pray to my Father, and he will provide me more than 12 legions of angels? How then could the scripture be fulfilled that it must happen thus? As you go on down to this a little bit more in this account, verse 58, it said, but Peter followed him at a distance to the high priest's courtyard, and went in and sat in a servant, with a servant to see the end. And we kind of take this turn here where we really focus on Peter in this lesson right here. In fact, verse 69 on down, it tells us about what Jesus said earlier about Peter being betraying Jesus. And so we go all the way from this Passover observance that they had come to do to Jesus betraying Jesus, leaving him to betray him, to Jesus going out to the Garden of Gethsemane and praying there, and now the arrest of Jesus. And as we think about Peter's denial of Jesus, we have to keep in mind that he's not the only one. You know, the point that was made a few Wednesday nights ago about the fact that Thomas wasn't the only one that had some problems with believing in the resurrection of Jesus. Well, Jesus had told these disciples at the Passover that they would all have problems during this time. If you back up and remember verse 31 of this same chapter, and there it said, Jesus said to them, all of you be made to stumble because of me this night. For it's written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. And so that was what we witnessed here, that all of them eventually left Jesus to himself or by himself during this time period. But specifically, Peter had been told that he was going to deny Jesus. And so we're going to focus on that. As we look at this foretold event, now I keep on thinking about, now, sometimes in movies, there'll be the storyline where a person knows what's going to happen in the future. They are told, or they find out what's going to happen in the future, and they decide, I'm not going to let that happen. And you would think here in Peter's case here that since Jesus had told him that he was going to deny him, that Peter would surely think, okay, I can prevent this, I can stop this. Well, as you look at the denial foretold in John 13, chapter 35, it's just kind of interesting how Jesus phrase this, that Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I'll lay down my life for your sake. Jesus answered and him, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most surely I say to you, the the rooster shall not crow twice. He had denied me three times. And think about what Peter, his whole attitude during the ministry of Jesus. He was one that was very quick to respond, to speak out. He is one to express his faith in Jesus. But also we know that Peter was sometimes very presumptuous and very quick to say things and then afterwards kind of regret saying what he had. And so he talks about the fact that, well, you don't deny me, Peter. And just imagine, again, being in Peter's position, how he thought about that, because here was a confident person. And here's a person that had no doubt that he was not going to deny Jesus. In fact, in his confidence, if you look over in Mark's account, in Mark 14, verse 29, it said, Peter said to him, even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not be. Now here Jesus says, all of you are going to be having problems this night, and Peter specifically, and Peter responds and starts saying, well, you know, everybody else may do this, and he didn't name off everybody, but I can almost envision Peter looking around and saying that here we have James and John, you know, they may deny you, and Andrew, my brother, may deny you, and Bartholomew may deny you, and Matthew may deny you. You just go on down to all the other 10 that's still there. And you may say, all these folks here may deny you, but I will not. And that's what Peter's saying here. Everybody else may be, but I'll never do that, Lord. And so he goes on and says, Jesus said to him, surely I say to you, that today, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you'll deny me three times. But he spoke more vehemently, if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said likewise. Now maybe they were all kind of emboldened by the fact of Peter's confidence in this. And maybe they all felt exactly the same way as Peter. But you know, how many times Peter said, I would never do that. I would never do something like that. And that's what they're saying. And as you look at this here, we have to realize that, you know, one of the problems or one of the lessons learned about Peter's denial, there's a number of them here. But one of the lessons we have to learn is that there's a real danger in overconfidence. Now we may say, well, Peter had great faith. Well, Peter had confidence in himself. And that faith is confidence in God. Faith is belief in what God says and God's ability. But Peter's confidence, really in this case here, was in himself. And the thing about confidence is that confidence leads us to be, if we're not careful, simply to be, again, presumptuous and not really think seriously about the danger we're in. And the passage over 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12, it says, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Now, again, there's a real danger of that. And the dangerous fact is that when we think about our lives here, well, there may be certain things we'll say, I would never do. As Christians, we may look at people that get involved in things, and we may look back and say, you know what, I just don't understand that anybody could ever do that. I would never do anything like that. Well, that's what Peter's saying here. But we have to keep in mind that none of us are above temptation. The Bible points that out to us in a number of different ways, during different times, and we just have to realize that that means we have to all be careful. I don't know how many times I've had brothers and sisters in Christ that maybe have to confess sin in their lives that affected their families, maybe unfaithfulness to their spouse. And then we may look at that, we may think, you know, I would never be unfaithful to my spouse, or maybe the fact they got involved in some other kind of sin in life, well, I've talked about this morning, some of drug abuse or some other things like that. And we may just think, well, you know, other people, I just don't understand how they could ever, anybody could ever commit that sin. All of us are temptable. All of us can be tempted. Maybe of very different things. But we just have to realize none of us are above temptation. And not only that, but also we don't take the warning seriously. When Jesus told Peter, said, you'll deny me three times. And Peter said, oh, you know, anybody else may deny you, but I won't deny you those times there. Just kind of wonder, well, did he really take seriously what Jesus said to him? When you look at warnings we have in our daily lives, and there's all kind of warnings we receive and have, and maybe sometimes we're a little bit overwarned about certain things, but we might after a while just kind of block some of those warnings out. I remember when I worked down at a factory in Bowling Green called Motor Wheel, and there was a high-power equipment, and we made tire rims for our trucks. And we had all these kind of machines, or welding torches, and machines that would cut metal, and machines that would stamp holes in your rims. And all those machines had warnings on them. And we were told at various times that before you open this gate, that what you had to do, the procedure to go through, so the machine be all the way on. And before you turn it on, what you had to do. And all those warnings for a reason. But you know, a lot of times people decide that I don't have to do all those things. I can maybe short circuit, and I could reach around that gate instead of turn it off, and I could get done what I need to do and just keep the machine running. And you know what? We had an injury about every week at that place. And almost all those injuries were because they didn't heed the warning. Well, you look at the Bible, a lot of times we see warnings that's given to us, and we have to maybe sometimes think, you know, I'm such a strong person, such a strong Christian, and I know what the Bible says, and I don't have to do all those. I don't have to be as careful as other people. If we don't take the warning seriously, we're going to be in God's trouble. Over in 1 Corinthians 10, after verse 12, we talk about take heed where you stand lest you fall. And verse 13 said, no temptation overtaking you, except as common to man. But God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, you may be able to bear it. But the way of escape is going to be there, but you have to want to take it. You have to be taking this seriously. And if you don't take it seriously, you know, you're not going to take that way of escape as seriously as you should. And so we find here that Peter basically kind of ignored the warning. And then he said, I don't think that'll ever happen to me. When you look at the Bible, again, there's a lot of warnings given to us. Brother Stalby, he was a member down in Trenton, Florida, when I preached down there in his 90s. And he said the two most important words of the Bible, and his two most important words, will probably always have I would think these are the most important words, but his two most important words of the Bible, he said, was take heed. And when you look at that word take heed, it's used 55 times. And what that means is be careful. What it means is pay attention. What it means is that there's danger right around you. And when you look at all those 55 take heeds, the reason that they're there because we need to take heed. We need to really be careful what we're doing. But the fact is that the best warning, and Peter had the best warning device possible. He had the Son of God telling him what's going to happen. But the best warning advice you have doesn't do any good if you don't heed the warning. That's one lesson about Peter, and that is that Peter was overconfident and really didn't pay attention to the warning he had. The second thing about this is that Peter's willing to die for Jesus. And you stop thinking about that night here. That here's, of all the disciples, Peter is the one that said, I'll never deny you, and I'll even die for you. And he's the one that really did show example of the fact that he was very serious about that. If you look at John's account, in John 18, verse 10. And there's an Simon Peter having a sword drew it and struck the high priest's ear and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then Jesus said to Peter, put your sword to the shelf, or sheath, shall not drink the cup which my Father has given me. Now, Matthew's account points out to us that the whole group of people came out to rescue the soldiers, and you had the people that Judas was with, Jesus with him. And so there's a number of folks there. And when Peter drew that sword there, then he was really facing incredible odds. It was Peter and Jesus against everybody else in Peter's mind. And it didn't matter. And if he was going to die, that's just fine. I'll die for you, Jesus. That's what he said. And as you look through this here, we find that Jesus, though, stops Peter. Stops in death's tracks. And not only that, but he actually undoes what Peter has done. That he attaches the ear back to the servant and had his ear cut off. And in Luke 22, verse 50, said, and one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cut off his right ear. But Jesus answered, said, permit even this, and he touched his ear and healed him. That's been observed a number of times that the idea maybe Peter's left handed because he cut off Malchus's right ear. I've always wondered myself when I read that is that did he intend to cut off his right ear? Was he just kind of swinging, hoping to hit something? Either way here, Malchus had his ear cut off and Jesus undoes that or actually reattaches his ear here. And as you think about that, we think about from this point onward though, something's different about Peter. Now that's been the high point of Peter's bravery and his courage was right there. And when Jesus reattaches his ear, that servant's ear, and says, put your sword up, Peter is no longer willing to do the same thing, no longer willing to die for Jesus. And we see that in a number of things, and that is, you think about, why was he all of a sudden willing to deny Jesus? I mean, as we read on through here, this case here, we'll find that he did deny Jesus, just as Jesus said. But how do you go from being a person who says, I'll die for you, and I'll fight for you, and I'll face these odds that are incredible, how do you go from that point to within a few hours saying, actually, I don't even know who this guy is? How do you do that? You know, and sometimes it's a case of the criteria was different. And as Peter apparently was willing to die in battle, if he had to go with sword swinging and be cut in half with a sword to be killed that way, that's fine. He was willing to do that. And you know, when we think about how we live for Christ, and Jesus talks about us and the sacrifice we have to make, and he talks about this in a sense of bearing the cross. That's the phrase Jesus used a lot of times. And we find passages such as Matthew 10 verse 38. He does not take his cross far from me. It's not worthy of me. Every disciple has to be willing to bear that cross. They have certain sacrifices they're making in their lives. And you think about over in Matthew 16 verse 24. Then Jesus says to the disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And when we read that passage, we may think, well, that's okay. But you know, sometimes we may, in our minds, think about, I'm willing to bear this cross. But there may be other crosses that we really don't want to have to bear. And I'll give you an example. I mean, there's some people that it kind of depends on the cross we're talking about. For instance, there's some people, when you talk about attending services, they had no problem at all. And they could attend services without any problem. They're willing to bear that cross because it's easy for them. Other people, attending services is really hard to do. And they may think about the fact that you kind of get the idea from a few people that, you know, if we didn't have services, being Christian would be a whole lot easier. And so their cross may be the idea of simply having that time and being able to come and worship God. Some people may have simple pleasures are the cross they can bear. And that denying themselves some of the pleasures that the Bible talks about, they are sinful in nature. And they don't have a problem as far as being good to their neighbor. They don't have a problem coming to church. They can do that all the time. And they don't have a problem as far as helping those in need. But when it comes to actually denying themselves some of the pleasures of life, the pleasure of flesh, then all of a sudden that's a hard thing for them to do. The giving up drinking may be really hard for somebody that's used to drinking alcohol beverages. Or maybe the idea of somebody that is living in an immoral relationship. And so you kind of think of people like that. There's people that this cross are really some pleasures. And as long as they don't give that up, then the cross is easy. Other people, maybe the cross really is their neighbors. That'd be good to fellow men. Again, they don't have a problem with all the other things we talk about as far as coming to church or abstaining from sin in their life as far as worldliness. But you know, the idea of actually being good to my neighbor and helping my neighbor, that may be a hard cross for some people to have. Or maybe the idea that, and we just kind of think of other things people may sometimes say, that's really hard for me as a Christian to do those things. But we have to realize the fact is we cannot pick and choose our own crosses. What's the old talking about the people sometimes wanting to pat a cross? And, you know, we don't have that choice on as far as what we can, what are willing to do to serve God. And Paul in Galatians 2 verse 20, he said this way. It said, I have been crucified with Christ, no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And as one Paul had that attitude, you kind of read about Paul's life and all things he endured, the shipwrecks, the beatings and stonings and the attitude people had towards him and the hatred Jesus had towards him. And you think about how did Paul endure that? And Paul would simply say, it's easy once you're dead. He had already been crucified. There's nothing else they could do for him or to him. And so he didn't have a problem with those things because he had already been crucified with Christ. But then also a third thing is that Peter followed Jesus from a distance. As we read about this tonight as it goes on here, over in Mark 14 verse 53, it said they led Jesus away to the high priest. And with him were assembled all chief priests, the elders and the scribes. But Peter followed him at a distance, right to the courtyard of the high priest, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. And so kind of have this in mind here, and it doesn't really talk about the other disciples. We know that John was nearby because what he writes in his gospel. But he does stop thinking about this, and that is that he's close enough to Jesus that he can see him. But it's really not beside him. He's following at a distance. And as it comes to this place where they'll have a trial and all these hostile statements being made about Christ, that he's going to be there, and it talks about getting by the fire. So just kind of again in my mind, I see this man here with other people as they surround this fire they had because it's probably cold night, obviously. And as these things are going on, then we find that Peter starts having a problem. And John 18, verse 15, says, Simon Peter followed Jesus, so did the other, another disciple. That's probably John there. John tends to refer to himself in that term there. He doesn't identify himself as by person, but simply as another disciple, as that disciple. And so it said, now that disciple is known to the high priest, and went with Jesus to the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to her to get the door and brought Peter in. Now, probably John's, you know, reasoning here was he's actually doing Peter a favor and he allows him inside and again close to the fire where you can see everything going on there. And really this wasn't the best place to be at though. Because again, he was at a distance. And he stopped thinking about what Peter had done here. Peter had gone from drawing the sword and being directly involved in things, being simply an observer. He's now a spectator in sports. Sometimes you're not careful. If you're a player, you start watching the action instead of taking part in the action. And what that means is you quit actually responding to things. And sometimes, like Peter here, in religion, people kind of do that. And that is, Peter became a spectator. And that is that he wasn't really, he didn't run away. Yesterday I was talking to somebody about preaching this tonight, and he said, you know, I have a kind of different viewpoint about what some people usually think about Peter. He said, I recognize that Peter wanted to be near Jesus. That Peter just didn't run away from Jesus, and that's true. That's true. He just didn't run away. But you have to realize that he wasn't right close either. He wasn't by Jesus' side. He was off a little distance there. And so he's there, but he was not close to Jesus at that time. And again, a lot of times we can be kind of like in Peter's place. And that is, we may look at this and we may think, well, we're going to be, again, we're going to be close enough, we have enough religion to know not to run away all the way into the world, but we're not really faithful enough to be really faithful. And that's a miserable place to be in. Again, we think about things the Bible talks about as far as being the example of the Christian that we should. And being a salt and light of the world. There are some people that they know what to do, but as far as doing it, they're just not good at doing that or not willing to do that. And so, that's a miserable place to be in. You know, Peter, as you read through this night, I don't think Peter was a happy person. Do you? And do you think Peter was really satisfied with his life that night? Now, obviously not. But Peter was again in that position. And we have to ask ourselves to just make sure that we're not just religious enough to be miserable. I've known a few people like that. And one way maybe looking at ourselves, what if every member of this church is like you and I? What if every Christian was like us? How faithful would we be? How faithful would this congregation be? How dependable would this congregation be? Another way of saying that, will there be enough salt or enough light if everybody was like I? And so Peter here was an example here of simply not being as close to Jesus as they should be. But then as you read on down through here, I also notice Peter's denial. And there's three of them, of course, recorded for us. As you read through this denial, you'll find, for instance, John 18. I focus mainly on what John wrote here, but John 18, verse 17. It says, then the servant girl. Now again, here Peter is by this fire warming himself and you have these events occurring up here, the trial of Jesus going on, and a servant girl looks at him and says, you are not also one of the man's disciples, are you? Are you one of his followers? And he said, I'm not. And the servant's officers had made a fire, coat, stood there for his coat, and they warned themselves. Peter stood them and warned himself. And so it's pretty easy to deny, wasn't it? He kind of just stayed there and just kind of like acting inconspicuous. And when he was asked questions, no, I know this guy. Well, as you go on, we find the second denial.
The second Ananias, read through that here in John 18, verse 25. It said, now Simon Peter stood and warned himself. Therefore they said to him, you are not also one of the disciples, are you? He denied and said, I'm not. Now I realize the essence here given to us, the exclamation point, is not in the original text. And as you read through this here, we have to think about how would Peter have said that. But apparently, the second time, you know, you think there would be more force behind that denial. Okay, the first time it didn't really seem to work because, you know, he's asking basically the same question again. And so this time here he said, no, I'm not one of his disciples, not me. And then he go on to the third denial in Matthew 26, verse 7 to 3. And there it says, a little later, those that stood by came and said to Peter, surely you are also one of them, for his speech betrays you. Now this is more forceful. This is the point is we know you are because you talk like one. You talk like a Galilean. They're Galileans there. And we know how your speech is giving you off here, giving you up. And notice here, Peter, then he began to curse and swear, saying, I do not know the man. And immediately, a rooster crowed. You know, as you read through this here, the cursing, again, we're not told exactly what he said, the swearing. But you know, he's trying to prove that he's not a disciple. And with the idea, not only did he say, I'm not a disciple, but I don't even know who you're talking about. I don't even know the guy. And so each one of his denials becomes stronger as you read through this. And as you think about that, just kind of realize that Peter was in a position that once he made that first denial, you know, that second denial probably came a little bit easier, and that third denial became a little bit easier. But the fact is, once you start to deny Jesus, once he made that first statement, it was kind of hard to stop it then. And it became easier, in fact, to deny Jesus. Same for us. As once we deny Jesus, it becomes a lot easier to do it the second and third time as we go through our lives. And so he denies Jesus. And then finally, as you think about Peter here, and Jesus realized that Peter knew Jesus knew exactly what Peter had done. Now before this time here, just kind of keep in mind that Jesus had told Peter that Satan was going to sift him like wheat. As kind of an illustration about how he would actually give in. And so you read this account here, then in Luke 22, verse 61, it said, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And just again, kind of put himself in Peter's position. He's close enough to see what's going on, maybe to hear what's going on, but really not that close. And Jesus turns around and looks at him. Imagine how Peter felt right then. And said, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now again, it's one of the sadder accounts, isn't it? In the Bible, as far as denying Jesus, as far as betraying God. Again, just imagine how Peter felt that night. And as you do that, just understand, God knows our every weakness. He knows our every move and strength that we have. And that's why Jesus could tell Peter that this night you're going to deny me three times. But not only does God know that, but also Satan knows that. Satan knew as far as what Peter's weakness was in this case. And as we think about ourselves, we have to realize we just sometimes need to be honest with ourselves as far as temptation we face and trials we face in life and how strong we really are. Sometimes we have to be honest with ourselves and admit that we have maybe issues or we have problems and we need to stay out of certain situations. And just be honest with ourselves with that. And as you do that, just realize that if we would face Jesus today, we'll be crying or be joyful. This morning we talked about the second coming of Christ. And I made a point that when some people talk about the second coming of Christ, they talk about it in a sense of, Lord, come quickly. I'm ready for him to come anytime because the sooner he comes, the sooner the process lights over with. Other people, that they are saying, I hope he doesn't come today because I'm not ready. Maybe because they denied Jesus in various ways in their life. But which one would be your attitude today?
Now, one of the things about Peter we recognize is the fact that Judas betrayed Jesus and Peter denied him, but we talk about Peter totally different, don't we? And the reason is because Peter repented and came back to Jesus. He followed after him. And Peter did give his life up for the cause of Christ later on, that he grew as a Christian. As we live our lives, we have to realize that we grow as Christians. The first way, first thing you have to do is you have to start living life as a Christian, to grow as a Christian. And so we have a song selection. I appreciate your kind attention, Ryan, our listening. We have this song tonight with the important question, who will follow Jesus? Would you, if I would go down to each row here and ask each person, will you follow Jesus? Will you follow Jesus? Will you follow Jesus? Who among us would say no? Who among us would say, I'll follow him part of the way. I'll follow him as long as it's comfortable. But the question is, who will follow Jesus all the way? Tonight, if you need to respond to the invitation, why don't you come forward and stand as we sing.